Hey, it's Scott Brennan. Usually I don't record an intro before the podcast, but first I just want to say the podcast has been going great. Been really loving the guests I've been having on, getting some good responses. But this week I got to sit down with Chips Cooney. Now, those of you who don't know Chips is a comedian from Jersey. He's probably been doing comedy for, he's doing comedy for over 30 years. He's been in several films, been in Benchwarmers, the Adam Sandler movie. He's been on America's Got Talent. But I got to sit down with him and interview him about his life. I sat down and interviewed him at Scotty's Comedy Co. before the Watson Show. And, you know, we sit down for about 45 minutes, and it's not nearly enough to capture all the things this guy's done. But, you know, it was a pleasure interviewing him. But more importantly than his life, he's just a really encouraging guy, extremely nice, great to young comics like myself. And, you know, it was definitely a pleasure to have him on the cast. So hopefully this could be maybe part one, but take a listen, and I think you guys will enjoy. Here's Mr. Chips Cooney.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, it's Scott Brennan again on a Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Very, very, very excited today. I'm sitting here at Scotty's Comedy Club before the Watson & Watson show, which I help produce and do sound and things like that on. But I'm sitting here with a man I met a few months ago. And I'm sure a lot of you, if you're from New Jersey and you're into comedy, you've heard his name. And that's Mr. Chips Cooney. The man, the myth, the legend, Chips Cooney. Chips, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. It's nice to be here.
Yes. Chips, every comic I've talked to around Jersey, in fact, the first time I ever heard of you, Joe Fernandez, we were working together at a TV station, and he showed me your reveal bit.
Reveal.
The reveal. And I thought it was fantastic, but every comic I talk to around Jersey, like open micers, everything, seems to have a Chips Cooney story or has associated with you. You know, I just recently got to know you over the last few months, and we recorded a couple of things. We've got some ideas on the back burner, but it's been an absolute pleasure, first off.
Well, same here, Scott. You've been very nice to me, and I'm not used to being interviewed like this, being Chips. I'm usually doing a character, but let's do it.
Yeah. So, Chips, first off, how long have you been doing comedy?
Oh, geez. I started goofing around with comedy since I was in 12 years old.
12 years old. So as a 12-year-old, what are you doing with comedy? You just pranking your parents?
No, I remember my brother, a younger brother, was sick. He was 6 years old, and I was 12, and I pretended I was trying to cheer him up, and I pretended I was a doctor, a goofy doctor that kept tripping over
like
things.
Patch Adams.
Yeah, something like that, and trying to make him laugh.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah. Now, so you're 12, and you start to get the comedy bug in you. You start to enjoy it. You enjoy people enjoying making people laugh. So as you got older into high school, things like that, how did it start to grow?
Well, it didn't grow until I was playing in a band. I started fairly late, actually, you know, doing it
right
on stage in late 30s, maybe.
Okay.
So you have a very interesting background. I know you're a drummer, correct?
Right.
So is that, were you into the arts early, drumming, music, things like that?
I love the drums.
You still play?
I still play, but I don't go out and play as much because I'm doing the comedy. But I still stay in shape. I still practice.
Right. Now, like, what are your influences when you were, when you started drums? Like, what is there a drummer or a singer that you were trying to emulate on the drums, things like that?
No, it was just with the brushes. I was in this club one time, and there was a girl and her husband playing with a duet there, and she asked me if I wanted to sit in, and I went and sat in. It was a cocktail drum. That's a drum where you stand up and play.
Right.
She was, you know. And I played, and she thought I took lessons already. I said, no, I never played lessons. She told me to stay with it, that I have an ability. And I did.
So you're self-taught then?
Then I went for lessons.
Oh, okay.
I was sitting in again. I was playing drums in this club on a Saturday afternoon where I was bartending. I sat in, I was playing on the drums. The drummer wasn't there yet. And he came in while I was playing, and I got nervous. I got up. He says, no, sit down and play. And he's the one that sent me to a teacher. That was the Four Seasons drummer.
Okay.
Joey Cass.
Really?
We got to be good friends. Yeah, and he passed away a few years ago. He got me to take lessons.
Interesting. Now, did you do the music thing for a while, like as a career, or was it always like on a side thing? Or?
No. I wanted to get with this band. I had a regular day job, and my parents, don't do that. Stay with day job. You know, it's more secure. And they were right. And I auditioned for this band, and I was praying. It was up to me and this other drummer. The other drummer had a lot more experience than me, but he didn't want to do it, and I got the job. And I started playing full-time.
No, what kind of music was it? Like that was band?
No, it was a quartet.
Okay.
It was standard songs, Sinatra, okay. Stuff like that.
Right. So did you do touring, or did you?
We didn't tour all over, just the Jersey Shore.
Local gigs.
Yeah.
Now, so I know that you were mentioning a couple weeks ago that you went into the service, correct?
Sure.
What were you, Army, Navy?
I was in the Army.
You were in the Army?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I pushed up my draft.
Okay.
I wasn't doing anything. I was 18, 19. What am I doing? I said, there's no war going on. Let me go in the Army. So I pushed up my number, and then I got into the Army. They, you know, you can put down where you want to be stationed.
Right.
But since you didn't join, that's 4 years, you don't really have a choice. But I gambled and I won. I wanted to go to Germany, and that's where I went. It was great.
And what did you do in the Army when you were there? Like, what was your, were you a mechanic? Were you?
I was in a combat supply outfit.
Okay.
And and I drank a lot of real German beer and went out with a lot of Fräuleins.
How many years? How many years were you?
I was in Germany, I think, 22 months.
Wow. And how many years did you stay in the Army?
I think 2.5, almost 3.
2.5, 3. Okay, so you get out of the Army, and I'm guessing like most kids coming out of the Army, you had no clue what the hell was next.
No.
Where the hell am I going? What am I doing? So what did you start? Did you start getting back into the, maybe the band stuff? Did you start thinking about comedy? Did you start acting? I know you've got like a quite an interesting resume.
Well, I went to got a job with G.D. Searles. It's a pharmaceutical plant.
Okay.
That's still around.
Right.
They make syringes and stuff. Then I started playing. Then while I was working at G.D. Searles, I was jamming, going to jam sessions, which they don't have anymore.
Not,
you can't
not
even.
Too often,
we used to go in the club, and you know, and they don't have them anymore. Jam sessions. Then I started to get more into it. I was hanging around with a lot of musicians, jazz musicians. But I went with the commercial thing for a while. Then I went with the jazz, and I got other jobs to compensate my money. Worked in a warehouse. Delivered for a drugstore, bartended, taxi.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, just to keep me into the jazz scene.
So now, when does the... You said the comedy didn't start till around late 30s. Okay, so were you still just doing music, doing things? Now, I know you have a love of baseball, too.
Yeah, sure.
Were you playing baseball, too?
I played baseball. I played semi-pro ball. I had a workout with the Yankees at the Yankee Stadium.
Really? What year was this?
Oh, Jesus, you really want to know?
I do.
57.
Wow. So at the time, were there any of the big names we know? Like
Mantle was playing then.
Really?
Yeah, Mantle. He was ahead of me, though. He was older than me.
Wow.
And
What position did you play?
I played the outfield.
Okay.
And there I was, about 17 of us, playing in Yankee Stadium. I couldn't, you know, it was close, too. My father drove me there. He couldn't come in. He had to wait for me. And I couldn't believe I was standing up at play where Babe Ruth stood and Lou Gehrig. This is the old Yankee Stadium.
The good one.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. So how... I'm guessing through baseball, semi-pro bowl, you must have traveled around a lot with that, too, right?
Not too much.
No, just local leagues.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, like you see like whatever it is, double A or single A, you go down to Lakewood Blue Claws or Somerset Patriots. And even though they're like small teams, they travel a good amount
now.
Yeah,
they travel a lot now.
Like we went down to the Blue Claws game maybe.
Who's that, the Blue
Claws? They're the Phillies double A.
Double A?
Yeah.
All right.
Lakewood. So double A is usually like some of the best to watch because you get a lot of those kids who are like the big prospects in double A and then they bump them up right before. But they travel a lot. I was looking at their schedule. They're in upstate New York, then they're down to Jacksonville and all over the place.
Double A.
Yeah.
What about the Jackals here? The
Jersey Jackals. I don't know. That might be independent. I know the Newark Bears, I think they just shut down recently. I don't think they're a team no more.
The Newark Bears, the original Newark Bears, I was too young. My older brother was the mascot of the Newark Bears in Newark at Old Rupert Stadium.
Jeez. What is the mascot? A bear, obviously?
He just sat in the dugout with the players. They liked him so much. He was such a quiet kid. He was older than me. And he was the mascot. I got pictures of it at home yet. And the Yankees, you know, Phil Rizzuto used to play with him, all those guys.
Jeez. So... I mean, that's amazing. Already you got, you know, you got the Army, you got a drummer, you got playing semi-pro ball. So how long did you play ball?
I played until I was around 19. What happened, I pulled a hamstring muscle in high school my senior year.
Right.
Running track. And the same day we had a baseball game. And they had me put me in the game, and I tore it. I tore it. That never got better.
So you were basically a result of an injury then?
Yeah, and I got a write-up on it.
How does that work? Like, they say, you know, Chips, you're too hurt, you're done, or?
No, they just watch you a lot.
Yeah.
They want to see how consistent, if you're going to get hurt. And one time, one of the scouts came to the game. He saw me get hurt, and you know, everybody wanted me to play. I came out of the Army. They just forgot about the injury, and I wanted to go into music. Broke my father's heart. But he must have been happy when I did a movie with Reggie Jackson. I didn't play ball with him.
Tell us about that. I mean, that's why I wanted to interview you so bad. You have, like, story after story after story. Like, you have something. You have a little bit of... You know, everything going on.
Well,
a movie with Reggie Jackson. Go ahead.
The Benchwarmers.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah. I was going to get to the present, but go ahead. So you were in Benchwarmers, which is what? That's Adam Sandler
production.
Now, first off, how did you get into that? And like, I know you've done some acting, little roles here and there, and how were you contacted for that? And you know, how was the experience?
I heard Adam had me in his radar for a movie. I heard it through the grapevine.
Uh-huh.
So I called up his manager. They didn't know me. Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, we'll tell Adam.
We'll let him know.
A week later, I get a call from his manager, and Adam's on the phone. He says, I got a movie for you. Just like that.
And what was the experience like filming that? It had to be great.
Well, I never get excited about things because there's a lot of disappointments in this business. But I flew out there. They gave me...
Where was this?
This was in California. No. San Gabriel is where the shoe was. And flew me out there. I was there a week. And when my scene came up, the van took me from the hotel to the set, and there was Adam. Adam came up to me, you know, and watched me do it. And it went good, the scene. Everybody remembers that scene. That's in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. So I feel like we have to backtrack a little bit.
Go ahead.
Because we just skipped, like, 40 years, 50 years.
I'm trying to do that. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Now, obviously, you must have been on the radar because of your comedy.
He saw me.
In your comedy career. So... You played the ball, you worked the jobs, you did the band stuff, you did all sorts of things. When does comedy start to become serious? Like, holy crap, maybe I can do this.
I was working in a trio, you know, on the drums, and I was making this piano player laugh. And he was such a deadhead, he never laughed at anything. And the leader of the trio told me, if you can make Frank laugh, you can make anybody laugh. He says, I got a thing happening in a couple of weeks. Why don't you get 5 minutes together and come up on the stage? And I was so nervous, but I did that.
And it went well.
It went well, but I was nervous. I asked about 20 people to come. They didn't even know. They only got encouraged by one person.
No, what decade is this?
This is in the late 80s.
Okay. So right before,
well, about the mid '80s.
So right during like the big boom of stand up.
Yeah, working all the time.
Yeah, which I wanted to get to. You were mentioning last week that we were just talking on the side of the show or whatever, and you had mentioned that like there was just work everywhere. Working five nights a week, comedians everywhere. You worked with, you know, some of the greats. You mentioned you saw Chris Rock when he was young. You mentioned you saw Robin, who, you know, unfortunately just passed.
Yeah.
Everyone. You said Seinfeld. He was stick to himself. You were telling me all sorts of stories. So can you tell a little bit about that era, what it was like to work, some of the guys you came in contact, some of the best shows you had, some of the worst shows you had,
well,
what it was like?
I was working up at Catch. That was the hot room at the time, right, in the early 80s. Lenny Bruce's daughter was hanging around there singing, and I loved Lenny Bruce. Mm-hmm. And Chris, they had an audition night, and I remember Chris Rock going up there. He was 18, and I'm listening to him. I say, this kid's funny. He's doing stuff 18 years old. He sounds like he's 30 years old, you know, and he passed the audition. And I still stay in touch with him. And as far as Robin Williams started to hang out there, and he saw me one night, and he asked me if I wanted to do improvs with him. Sure, I said. He says, all right.
Now, was he a name at the time? Or
Yeah.
So he was coming off, what, like Good Morning Vietnam? And
He was shooting Moscow on the Hudson.
Okay.
And I got a phone call. I'm waiting for him on the Sunday. I figured he ain't going to come. He's not going to come. I got a phone call. They said, hey, Chip's Robin on the phone. Get out of here. He says, no, it is. I got on the phone. He says, I can't make it, Chips. He says, I'm doing dialect lessons for the movie I'm doing. But I'll be there Tuesday. And he came Tuesday. Started hanging around, real unassuming guy. Not like some, you know, guys
around here.
Christ, you think they were, you know, and here's a Adam Sandler, Chris Rock. I learned something from Chris Rock when we were doing shows together. And then at that time, the guy who booked us didn't have a lineup. And I said, Chris, when you want to headline, what do you want to do? He says, I don't care. I'll go up anytime. I said, well, He's got something else on his mind. Bigger. Right. It's not an ego thing. And that's what I learned from him.
Now, like, so you're working mostly the city, I guess, at the time?
Oh, yeah, all over. All and over Jersey, the too. Everybody was doing comedy.
And what was it like you hear the comedy boom, but was it like, were the places, so, like, packed with audience? Or was it more just everyone trying to be a stand-up comedy?
No, they were crowds.
Yeah. So, you now, you started, when you were at this time, in the 80s, late, early 90s, what was your act like? Where did the magician stuff come in yet? Which we'll get to in a minute.
No, the magician didn't come yet.
So what was your act like? More?
It was characters.
Characters. And yeah. You know, those of you who've heard of Chips, you know he's a pretty much he's a character himself, but he's a character kind of actor. Every week on this Watson show, we have him play some kind of strange character.
It's got to be strange.
Yeah. It's not fun unless it's strange.
You can't do it.
When did the line of comedy and acting start? Like, when you went into stand-up, were you thinking about acting, or were you acting first and thinking about stand-up?
I was going on auditions for acting. You know, I was going to Manhattan, walking the streets. And I got a couple things. I got a national commercial. And the guys would say, well, send that out. Send that commercial out to everybody. And you did, but they would call me up and say, if we need something like you, we'll call you.
Right.
That's all I can do. What am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that started.
So what was like the first significant acting thing you did? Like the first role where you're like, oh, that was pretty good, or that's pretty big, or I know you're a pretty big movie buff. I can hear it just when you quote in lines. You seem to know a lot about movies and people's roles, and you seem to have dialogue from movies all through the decades. Who's your? I'm kind of jumping around here, but who's like your? Who did you really look up to acting wise? You seem to really have an appreciation for film.
Oh, geez, if you look at some of those old actors, I mean, young. They were young.
Right.
I was 10. Robert Mitchum. I loved Robert Mitchum.
Right. What about like Jimmy Stewart and guys like that?
They were all good actors. Those are the ones you learned from,
right?
By watching them, and I was only 10 years old.
I mean, it's interesting because those are the names that, you know, I'm so removed from them, but I still hear them and I still will look things up. And my dad was a huge fan of Jimmy Stewart, and those names, you know, they're timeless. And you know, you see people now even like going back and studying them and
trying to relive that
kind of delivery. And
Johnny Depp is one of my favorites. Right. He's a young actor.
Yep. Yeah, I mean,
Tom Hanks.
Fantastic.
These people, you got to jump out of the screen.
I think my favorite actor, current actor, is Edward Norton. You know him?
Yeah,
from
sure.
Fight Club
did,
and American History X.
Background work for him in, really? What was that bowling alley thing he did? Was that Norton?
Well, Ed Norton, he was in Fight Club, and he was in American History X, and he's in...
Wasn't he in a series every week? Was that somebody else?
Not Norton from The Honeymooners, but...
No, not him.
Well, the reason I respect Norton so much is he reinvents himself every role. You know, he goes from playing a schizophrenic in Fight Club to a neo-Nazi in American History X.
That's
and he,
great.
You know, he chooses a role, like maybe he has one a year, if that. It's not one of these guys who's in 35 movies coming out, and you can tell he's just collecting a paycheck. And the other thing I really like about him, he's humongous humanitarian. He runs all these charities, and he stays out of the limelight, but he's just respected as an actor. And those are the kind of guys I really like.
Well, those are the best ones.
You know, and I know, like, he'll be one of those guys when he's 60, 70 years old, he'll be putting out little films and just blow you away. So what was the, like I said, what was the first like real acting job that you felt like was really good for your career?
Oh, Jesus. I did a couple of Louis C.K. movies.
Nice.
Me and Dave Vitale. In fact, I'm opening up for Dave Vitale October 2nd.
Wow.
At the Tarrytown Music Hall.
Dave Vitale or?
Dave.
Wow.
And I worked with him, and I was on Drew Carey. HBO special with him, so
that's
I reached out to him and he got in touch with me.
Now, so you're acting. You're doing comedy. Now, one of the things you're known for is your magician actor shtick, whatever you want to call it. For those of you who don't know, Chips, he plays this magician, but what would you call it, like a terrible hack magician? Like everything is...
Yeah, but in my eyes, it's great.
Right, it's awesome. But I mean
it's real magic in my eyes.
Right, so he plays like the serious magician, but all his tricks are completely obvious to the audience, which is fun. And he has this very like dry delivery where people are kind of, you know, they're cracking up. Like an example, he'll take two solo cups, right, and pretend they're one and then double them when really they're like stacked. Like it's kind of hard to explain. If you go online and just look up Chips Cooney, right, on YouTube, you'll see his act. So when did that start, and how did you come up with that?
I went home one night, and I'm watching reruns of Columbo.
Okay.
And on this particular episode, it was called, I think, Magic, the Great Santini, and Jack Cassidy. It's a magician. Right. He's selling out shows like crazy. You know, and everybody's coming to his magic. But he's a Nazi, and the owner's going to turn him in.
Okay. This is on a Columbo episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he kills the owner through his magic. Anyway, he wasn't doing anything. He was like...
stale.
He had his hand out like that. You know, and... He have a thing over his hand. Cut the camera. Then they put fire there. Action.
Right.
I said, this guy isn't... It was his demeanor that sold the magic.
Right. Well, they say...
he wasn't doing anything.
You can listen to, like, magicians, and when they're interviewed, they say 90% of the trick is the person and not the actual trick.
But Jack Cassidy sold that magic act. Columbo's getting wise to him now, you know, that he killed the guy. So Columbo walks into the club one night, during the day, and he sees Jack Cassidy on the stage. The camera shots from here up doing tricks. Not Cassidy. You don't learn that.
Right.
Action. It's the guy. He's standing doing it.
Right.
Cut. Then it's Jack Cassidy now.
Right.
But he wasn't doing anything. I said, this stuff is funny. I went the next night with New York. I went to Manhattan. I put a few things together. It was an instant hit.
So when did you come up with that? What year ish? You know,
that
when
would
did
be
you start
around
that?
Late '80s.
Oh, okay. So I'll take a look up. Thank you. So late '80s, you.
Yeah.
And that had to put you.
That was
into
it.
the next level.
That was it.
So. You start doing that, and then I'm guessing you start to blow up a little bit, and things start happening. What kinds of things did you get from that?
I got the Drew Carey HBO special from that.
Right.
I got the Jerry Lewis telethon from L.A.
Right.
I got Roseanne's Saturday Night Special from L.A. The View. What else?
Just that alone is huge, huge. And that had to thrill you going from working the grind of the clubs and just finding that thing that bam, you know, like, and not only that, you're a character guy, and that character was like the one that hit, you know, like that had to be like an amazing feeling, like, yes, I got something here. You know, I got him on the hook.
Some people don't get it. Some bookers.
I was going to ask you that. Has anybody ever been booked you as a magician? Like, and then been like,
they just don't get it. People resent what they don't understand.
Right.
And one particular place that doesn't get it is the Borgata Hotel, where I was for 7 years. Ray died, who booked it.
So you were working the Borgata, like, nightly?
Yeah.
Or
no, once or twice a year, 7 nights a week.
Riff
booked it. But the guy who took over... he never got it. Either you like Miles Davis or you don't like Miles Davis.
I mean, I personally love it. I think it's hysterical.
Some people, Indians, don't get it for some reason. They pulled me off the stage one night.
Now,
they thought I was serious.
Now, do you know any actual magic? That's probably a question you've gotten before.
I don't know any magic.
That's great.
I don't like
that's
magic.
That's the best part of it.
You know, a lot of these real magicians are really PO'd that they didn't think about this. They're too serious. I don't want to mention names.
Yeah. So, I guess you evolved the act a little bit because then you started doing the reveal, right? That's kind of like a branch of your...
Well, I saw them doing it on TV, the real one, the real magicians. And I said to myself, well, why not? I'll reveal mine.
Now, what he does for the anyone listening, the reveal is like him showing you these obvious tricks and then after that showing you how they're done. And that's where really I find that the funniest part because you're like, this is how you do this. This one took me 7 years.
Yeah.
And he goes through tricks.
First I'll do it, then explain it.
First I'll do it, then explain it. And he just comes with this dry... You know, this dry sense of humor, stays in character the whole time.
Gotta stay. I did that.
You know, it doesn't crack. And you have to go watch it to really understand it. You know, just talking about it isn't enough unless you really see some of these tricks. Like I said the solo cup one. What's another one that...
It's so simple.
The bell one. You know, you make the sound.
Some guys were sending me things. I'm scratching my head because I use this minoxidil, and it's making my head itch like crazy. Trying to keep my hair. Anyway, what was I saying?
You're talking about the reveal, the tricks.
Yeah, I forgot.
Or I was talking about like the other kind of trick you had. You know.
Yeah, the simpler they are, the better funnier they are. So, comics were sending me stuff
to use,
but it wasn't simple enough. It was clever.
Right. You want?
I'm not too clever.
You want straight up.
They were sending me here, do this. This will work. Your pass. You know. I said to myself, I don't want to hurt the guy's feeling, but he doesn't get it.
Right.
He's it's too clever. You want stupid stuff with the bell and the cups.
That brings us to you were on America's Got Talent, yeah. Which was that 3 years ago, 4 years ago,
2010.
So 4 years ago, four-ish years ago. So how did you get on that?
I didn't. Never watched the show.
Me neither.
Buddy Flip called me up.
Okay.
He does magic a little bit. This, a little that. He says, Chip, there's a show, blah, 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 on TV. You'll be perfect for it. You got a tape. I said, the only tape I got is on my computer of your magic. He says, I'll send it in for you. I says, all right. You know, I'm staying. So where are we going with this?
All right.
He sent it in. I get a call about 2 weeks later to come to Manhattan.
Yeah, like I never watched the show. I watched the clips of you on it, and I forget the judges. What are the judges? Howie,
Sharon.
Oh, Sharon Osbourne.
And what's his name? The English guy. One of James Bond's characters was his first name. Not his character. He played James Bond, English guy.
Yeah.
James Bond.
I can't think of his name either, but every time it seemed like Howie loved you, it looked like Sharon loved you, and then the other guy was just not having it. First off, what was that like going to an audition like with singers and God knows what else?
I'll tell you the truth. I just stayed in character.
The whole time.
The whole
backstage,
time.
Everything.
Backstage.
That's freaking fantastic.
They were interviewing me like you are, these English girls. And they wanted to know about me. And I said, what do you want to know? I said, you see me up there. How do you feel? You know, I says, I feel kind of, I got to reveal my tricks tonight. I'm not too happy about it. No. We want to know how you really feel. So this is how I feel. And the director's in the back going like this.
Yeah.
I would not get out of character.
That's
never.
Awesome. That's freaking fantastic. So how far did you actually get around, like,
New York, two rounds there. Vegas. When I got to L.A., I don't know what I was thinking of. I didn't do any more magic. I did a dance.
Right.
And a year and a half later, I thought of what I should have done. They even called me to my up in my room. They said, you have any more magic left before you do that dance? I says, no. My niece tells me all I wanted to do was come home. I never watched the show. I didn't know it was that big.
So where were you, like, down to, like, top 20, something so like
I
that?
I think 30-something. Wow. Out of 70,000.
And you became, like, a little bit of, like, an internet sensation, like, for a little while there.
For a little while, you walk around, people recognize you. I couldn't believe it. Stop for something to eat on the parkway, you know, at the service here. People, wow, walking around in the park in Bloomfield, people, oh, God, this show, I should have did something else. I know I should have.
When you were doing that, like, did you have, like, did people, you know how, like, when someone's on TV and they're doing well in those competition shows, like, the hometown starts to get behind you, you know, like, did you have people, like, rooting for you?
Or I don't know.
No idea.
No idea. Mary, I got to be friends with a real magician making cards disappear. And he loved him. He loved what I did, and he wasn't envy or anything.
That's great.
But I didn't go in as a comedian. The category I went on as an illusionist. Because they're writing down comedy, right? I said, no, what comedy? I said, that's not comedy. It's an illusionist. He just looked at me and wrote down illusionist. That's the category I went in on. I wasn't a comedian.
And that had to give you, like, a rebirth. Like, you were all of a sudden huge, you know, like, yeah. Everyone knew your name. And, I remember hearing, you know, I had never met you, but I remember hearing your name. Because, like, when I was out of college, I started doing stand-up a little bit. And Joe Fernandez was telling me about you.
Joe, good guy, Joe.
Oh, he's a great guy. I love him. He was on my podcast, like, 4 weeks ago.
All right.
He's a good guy. Going through a lot. But he told me about you. And, like, everyone I talked to seemed to know something about you or worked with you or has met you or seen you at a mic or things like that. Now, you're still going strong. You're still doing the comedy.
Still doing it.
Could you ever see yourself not doing it?
Maybe if I hit the lottery.
Yeah, but let's be honest.
I'd
still come
out. Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. Why?
We make coconuts disappear.
Why is the love still there? Why is the passion still there?
I don't know, because it's different what I'm doing. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah.
And I think I was always like this. One time making good money, another time making nothing, up and down, all my life, up and down.
I mean, you talk to musicians and comics who have made it, seems that kind of is the, if you expect that up and down and you know that you could hit your moment, but that moment could be gone as quick as you got it.
I was at the Brigade, and Louis Black was there, and I worked with him and did the Chicago Comedy Festival with him. He knows me. I knocked on the door, and this is Chips Cooney. Can I see if it's okay with Lewis? Can I come in and say hello to him? He went right inside. And I said, Lewis, I'm really so happy for you. He says, I was lucky. How about that?
Yeah.
Talking about modest.
I mean, I guess anything in the entertainment business takes a little bit of luck.
Absolutely.
You know, it takes who you know, who you run into one day, you know. Who wants to give you that shot?
Absolutely. Somebody asked Duke Ellington. You heard it, Duke Ellington, right? Did you ever know any great musicians that never became superstars but were great? He says, I know a lot of them like that. He says, it's playing the right thing at the right place at the right time. He said, it's being lucky.
And my father, one of his statements is always, timing is everything, Scott. Timing is everything.
Oh boy.
You know, like, you can't plan it, but, you know, you never know when you're going to run into something. And I think that's why you have to stick with something you enjoy. You know, you can work your job, but you got to, outside of your job, you got to push yourself and do something that, like, I have to do something creative. If I'm not, when I'm coaching and teaching, it's one thing, but when I'm outside, I got to either edit or put something together, which is why I'm loving this show and this podcast and trying to get into comedy more and more and more. And I think the thing I love about comedy the most is it's always a work in progress. It's never perfect. It's just you and the audience.
That's one night.
You can murder and kill on stage. The next night they can look at you like you're freaking, like you're crazy.
It's the audience, man. Then you got to learn. You got to change things around sometimes. Oh, they're not listening. What should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? very rare you get compliments from all the comedians. Some of them don't even want to bother you. Excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, I think that's what I love about it. It's perfecting a craft all the time. And I don't think there ever is perfection. It's just, achieving the next level, achieving the next joke. And it's, you know, that's what I think I love. It's like, it's malleable. It's something that you never know on what night you're going to
bump. You
don't
know what the heck can happen.
Yep.
You don't know what can happen.
Now, what are you doing these days? What are anything on the horizon? Any acting? Anything going on?
Well,
or just,
you know,
just hitting the comedy circuit still?
Adam was hinting around about another movie. I didn't hear anything about it. Who else was hinting around? Rob Schneider recently said he might have something for me. I have somebody representing me a little bit.
Right.
Because it looks better. And I haven't heard from him yet. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I just...
Just keep moving. Keep
just
moving.
Just keep being creative and...
And you got to feel that keeps you young at heart, you know, like...
I think so.
It has to. If you can make an 18-year-old laugh or a 75-year-old laugh, there's skill in that, and there's something
well,
that makes you feel great.
75-year-olds are hard because they can't hear you the first time. But the young people can hear you.
A couple more questions. Any young comics that you really enjoy, that you really think... Hey,
I haven't been watching any lately.
No.
No.
What about Watson over here? He's a bum.
Well, he's not young. I thought you meant like 18.
Oh, well, I don't know. Just comics that are up and coming.
I think everybody on this show's got talent.
Got something.
Yeah. It's just doing the right thing at the right place at the right time.
That's it.
I was doing real fast. I was working down at a village one time for, I think, $20 for one night. Somebody in the audience saw me. It was a director. Zabig, his name is. He did a lot of videos for the Who and for the Rolling Stones. And he put me in a video. It wasn't funny. It was classical music, but you had to act it out.
Right.
And with the music playing, and you're acting it out. And there's an example of doing the right thing at the right time.
Now, you have any tips you can give young comedians, guys like me, trying to start out, trying to really get into it, trying to, you know, grind it out?
Just do what you think yourself is funny.
Yep.
Do what you think is funny and take it from there because you can't do anything else.
Yep.
Just wait. If you do a bit, if you, Scott, thinks this bit is funny, then do it.
Right. And don't look back, right?
Yeah, and if you hear hear laughter, then you know something's happening with
something's
it.
It's working. Last thing.
I'm not Chip, an expert.
Chips, you are loved by not only I only know the Jersey little local comedy scene, but you were loved by them. But you have fans all over the internet. In fact, I just wanted to bring this up. I saw a YouTube video of a young kid, a little boy doing Chips Cooney at a talent show or something like that.
That's
fantastic. First off,
that's Craig's son.
Okay, who's Craig?
Cipolli. Craig did a lot of. He's into all his video. He lives in Florida now. He did a lot of Otto's movies.
Right,
and he called me up. You know, and we're in a thing right now called. Almost There. Maybe you saw that. Me, the Old Man.
It was like a music video.
It's a music
video.
Yeah,
I saw that.
3 minutes long.
Yeah, I saw that. You're like all over in the library.
Yeah, but I'm an old man. 20 years from now.
Right.
And but the kid.
It's unbelievable.
He called me up. He said, "Can you give me advice?" And I said, "Don't laugh when you're doing it." But of course, he grinned when he did it.
That has to make you feel awesome.
Yeah.
Was he 9, 10 years old,
yeah.
Something like that? Doing your
Mini
stuff
chips.
That you've been crafting for 30 years, something like that, maybe more than that.
Well, the magic, maybe 25.
Okay, but Anyway, Chips, we're gonna wrap it up here. First off, it was a pleasure having you on.
Well, same here. Thank you very much.
I'd love to have
you
back on again. We'll talk
anytime.
All things comedy, all things acting, film, whatever.
It was a pleasure.
You know, very happy to have you on. I think the podcast audience will love it, especially lately we've been having a lot of young comedians. It's nice to hear from someone who's been there, done that.
Tragic.
We had so many stories we could still cover. Guys you've come in touch with, guys you've seen come and go, guys you just that were terrible to you, and guys that really opened pathways for you. But either way, I look up to you, and looking forward to working on some projects in the future.
All right, same here, Scott.
All right, Chips.
Thank you so much.
This was another great episode. Please subscribe. Please download the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, go to Podbean. Share it with your friends. Keep the wind at your back, and I love you.